time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
What brings you to Ireland?
A wedding.
No, congratulations.
Oh, no, it's not mine. It's my friend's.
I can't believe Paul and Emma are getting married.
You balance me out, Madeline.
We do make a great team.
We do.
Hi, Mom. I can't help but think that things would be different if I had told Paul how I felt.
You're gonna have to start speaking up for yourself.
It's too late now. I wish I was marrying Paul Kennedy.
What the?
Oh! Paul? Emma!
Have you seen Paul?
I haven't seen him anywhere.
How did he get in there?
What is wrong?
I am not the one who's getting married. She is.
Exactly. You, my friend, are marrying Paul Kennedy.
Yes!
Come on.
Hello.
It's you.
How'd you get the ring on your finger?
You got down on your knee and you proposed to me.
I proposed? I mean, yes, of course, of course. Yes, I proposed.
My publicist said that we should get some PR pictures in some idyllic Irish backdrops. He thinks it'll help boost my sales figures.
Oh, so not just a wedding, but a good PR event too.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to spend the day with us tomorrow, can you leave your snark at home?
I'll do my best.
It's like a dream, although I'm not a
Hey, you're pretty good.
I'd love to get married up here.
Why don't you?
I don't want to be difficult.
I'd hardly call having a voice at your own wedding being difficult, would you? Is it everything you imagine?
I know this might sound strange, but I'm not sure this is supposed to be my life.
The time to speak up.
Leave me breathless.
Well, I wonder what she's going to say, given that actually I used this film in particular with some of our postgraduate students earlier this week, and views weren't great, it has to be said, but it's got Lindsay Lohan in. It's actually got some music by David Bowie. It's got an 80s soundtrack. It's got a wonderful, charming fairy godmother. It's like Sliding Doors meets the Irish in the 21st century. What is going to be the view of our Australian correspondent, Natasha Wanton, who, when she's not dealing with her very noisy little puppy, who's just barking away saying, it's wonderful. It's the movie that Richard Fitzwilliams has been aching to see for years. Forget his kind of discussions of life and the universe, etc. It's an Irish wish. Go, Natasha.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's particularly going to be the movie that Richard's been aching to see. But we'll hop into it, and Richard's entitled to make his own opinion on the whole thing. It was really wonderful to see Lindsay Lohan sort of back in the screen. I know she sort of had her troubles over the years, and it's really great to see her back in an acting role doing what she does best in sort of that romantic comedy genre. And that's very much what this is sort of pitching itself as. It's not one that you really have to think about a lot. So this is sort of aimed at that sort of weekend, sort of chill out with the girls.
I agonized over it, Natasha. I mean, I agonized over the whole thing. I thought, you know, the choice, the difficulties, sitting on the whole thing, wishing for a whole wedding scenario. It was wondrous.
I agonized over the whole thing, but that was more to do with the scripting issues, but we'll get to that stage in a minute. So this is the latest Netflix bonanza, if you like, just got released on the 15th of March. It stages itself as an American fantasy romantic comedy. I'm not quite sure like whether I would quite say it's fantasy. It's more of like a romantic comedy with a twist, if you like. It's directed by Janine Damon and it's written by Kirsten Hansen. It's obviously, as I said, starring Lindsay Lohan as the role of Maddie Kelly, Now, she's secretly been in love with her author of the book that she's helped edit. Now, I say helped edit, it's more of a co-writing situation, let's be honest. It becomes apparent quite early on that Paul is sort of quite reliant on Maddie to sort of keep everything going in his professional and in some aspects his personal life as well. But she's madly in love with him and she hasn't yet confessed her love. And she hasn't told any of her feelings to her friends either. It's only her mum that she keeps the secret with. Now, just as she's about to confess to him her feelings, he gets introduced to one of her best friends. Now, he immediately clicks with Emma. And it becomes apparent that they've got quite a bit of chemistry. And poor Maddie sort of watches on aghast as the man that she's supposedly in love with falls for one of her best friends. And it seems they have a very hard and fast romance because it skips then to 3 months later down the line, and they're all flying to Paul's Irish home for the wedding. That happened really fast, didn't it? And as they're arriving in this beautiful Irish country scenery, in the little airport, poor Maddie ends up trying to steal a photographer's bag. And there we get this
To be
meet
fair,
cute.
this isn't a nod in the direction of Lindsay Lohan's shoplifting experiences. This is quite
No.
simply because she effectively mistakes the bag and she thinks it's hers. She's not actually trying to steal it. I'm just speaking on behalf of the many Lohan fans out there who are saying that's a disgrace. She doesn't try to steal the bag at all. It's just a mistake.
She does. And this is where we get introduced to probably the best aspect of the whole movie, which was probably for me, which was Ed Spillier's performance. I thought he was excellent. I loved him in Aragon. I've loved him since Aragon. I think he's great in this. For me, I'm going to add an additional point to the scoring of this film just purely for his snark and sass, because I think without him in this film, it would have been quite a dry movie. I actually really enjoyed his performance. It was a little bit different compared to what is your usual rom-com kind of scenario. I liked it. I liked his twisting of the norms there. So she goes along with the wedding planning anyway, after not finding her bag and not stealing his bag. She goes along with the wedding planning and finds herself under what appears to be a very majestic tree in this beautiful backdrop and countryside. And here's where it lost me a little bit, because she goes to make a wish on the phone to her mum. And lo and behold, this very random woman, sort of fairy godmother, pops out of nowhere.
Saint Bridget is a random saint, you
But
know,
it
it's
doesn't get explained that it's Saint Bridget. Like, it only explains who she is. And like in the last like 20 minutes of the movie, I could have done with an explanation a little bit more as to who she was at the start of it, because this random woman popping up in a headscarf with some very
happens all the time
contrite
in Ireland, you know,
thing
seriously.
was it was just very like the amount of movies you watch where you've got this sort of wish kind of fulfillment sort of prophecy thing going. You see it all the time, right? All this sort of trope. I felt that the way that it handled this one was very jarring. I didn't like how it did it. Like, I liked the idea that it was Saint Bridget. I think that's very sweet and a very lovely nod to Irish culture. I could have done with a little bit of an explanation as to who this random woman was that just pops up out of nowhere. I felt like it interrupted the flow of the film, I felt a little bit. But anyway, she pops up and poor Maddie gets to make her wish that she's marrying Paul. And next thing you know, she's waking up in bed and she is actually marrying Paul, and it's her wedding that they're planning. But she seems to discover over the next couple of days that maybe being married to Paul is less of a wish and more of a nightmare, as we sort of unravel more of his character and his
It's like
family
Meghan
and the
Markle and Harry,
conditioning.
basically. It's their story just writ large on the big screen.
It's interesting. It's very predictable. You can see right from the start how it's going to get, pretty much how it's going to get from A to B. You can kind of tell the major plot points. There were a little bit of a few nice surprises along the way, and some gorgeous real music and fiddle music along the way, scenery. Look, It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. It's not the best movie I've ever seen. I'm probably going to sit at around a 7 just because I did laugh at some of the dialogue, particularly when Ed Spiliers was like talking. I thought that some of his dialogue was quite witty. The rest of it, I think it was good acting that was sort of held back by quite a clunky script. I think the script was the main problem of the film. And people did what they could with it. They committed, which was good. It's good to see commitment from actors, but I felt, yeah. Well, hey, it's a cheesy rom-com. You get what you get. You know what you're going to sit down for. You know what it's going to deliver. I'm going to go with a 7.
Okay. Curiously, I also would have gone with a 7, but Yetunde Adegoke, one of our postgraduate students doing an MA in journalism for her Journalism and Contemporary Cinema scenario, concluded that the scenery was absolutely beautiful, but Irish Wish, she says, is an assortment of romantic escapades marred by uneven execution and excess fantasticality. Extraordinary. Possibly it's an interesting take of that. Fia van den Vogert in the Netherlands, have you enjoyed the delightful colour and wonderful joie de vivre that Irish Wish brings to you?
I mean, I enjoyed it. I think romantic comedies are just in the realm of their own, and you have to see them like they're just there, and they're fun. They're not cinematical masterpieces, and they're not supposed to be. Everyone knows that they're not supposed to be. They're just, there's a romantic love interest, and then somehow they're always going to end up together. And Dip's movie did that greatly. I mean, you always have to look, are they pretty? Yes, they're pretty. And that will work out, and then just make the movie great. So,
and your score,
and
Fia?
Then we got to see some more of Ireland, and I love Ireland. So it was great. I enjoyed it.
Right. And your score?
Oh, I have to agree with a 7, I think. Yeah.
7 looks as though it's a magical 7, of course. Mystical number. Anakosh Gunnell, have you also managed to see Irish Wishes yet?
Yes, I did see it this morning. And as Natasha and Fia said, you know what to expect when you start a rom-com. You know it's going to be cheesy, and you know, thankfully, they're going to end up together because we all need to see movies that end well. But I mean, it was good. It was nice. It was a nice thing to watch on a Sunday morning while drinking your coffee, I say. So I think the 7 that Natasha said, it's quite well. I would have went for a 6.5, probably. I love Lindsay Lohan. I just love her. She's amazing. But she's been in better movies, and like I feel like I'd rather watch those than this one. But yes, rom-com, I don't think they're that bad. I mean, well, they're nice. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, and frankly, I can never actually understand why Richard doesn't have Lindsay Lohan miles ahead of Jessica Chastain in terms of quality actresses and various other sort of fine folk there. I mean, certainly Emma Stone, she's no Lindsay Lohan, clearly. Anyway, Richard, given that sadly Lindsay probably will not get an Academy Award for her role in Irish Wish, I don't know why, but 7 seems to be the overall score. Is it one that you would say, well, I must check this out now?
Well, certainly Natasha's review has tempted me, I have to say. I'm not sure. It does depend what's on offer. And I have to be frank, Alex, but since or after the Oscars, the Oscar nominees have replaced almost everything at the moment, so you know, very, very possibly. I will definitely consider.
Well, there we go. It's one way of actually sort of opening up the whole range of our life and the universe, etc., as we go into a whole new area, which is all about dolls and the Coen brothers and a whole variety of other strange activities that go on. In not necessarily a rom-com, or is it a rom-com? Or is it the Coen brothers doing a rom-com? Is it something else, Richard, that you'd like to talk about with Drive Away Dolls?
The case, Santos.
Not on your life.
Hello, girls! It's the last body shot competition, so we are gonna salt you up.
I've had it with love. I don't believe it's relevant to the 21st century lesbian.
You're not wearing that.
I just came from work.
I came from Toledo. I don't dress like it.
I'm not here to peddle my wares. I'm leaving town.
I am too. That was my plan. Where are you going?
Tallahassee, Florida.
I've been unhappy.
That's why we take this trip together, honey babe.
We get our act together, together.
Curly's Drive Away, Pennsylvania's most trusted name in car delivery.
Curly here.
Don't call me Curly.
And your name Curly?
My name is Curly. We just met. It's too familiar.
We're here for the car.
Wait a minute. You call with a drop-off in Tallahassee, and then these broads come in and say they're ready to go to Tallahassee. They drive the car instead of you. Is that bad?
Bad if they find the goods.
What?
We should see what's in here.
I bet it's locked.
I understand that you're unhappy, sir. We will find and deliver the package.
We just want your friends.
You cannot relate to the public, which in the service profession is a big handicap.
Did the two creeps find you?
They know we have their stuff.
Maybe we sell it back.
Shake them down.
Are they like wanted or something?
Oh no, they're not in trouble at all.
I'm gonna help you break a big murder case.
That is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I'm a cop.
Who are you?
Democrats.
Well, you've had a full day.
Well, Drive Away Dolls, Alex, I mean, I've continued, and I do think that certainly for me, I cannot speak for others, it's best when you go to see movies to know nothing at all about who makes, who makes them, yes, but I mean, not the plot, not a great deal about the gossip and so forth. So I didn't know what I was going to see. I did think, however, that a preview of this, it's actually just Ethan Coen. And the Coen brothers, of course, have a very distinguished filmography. Is this distinguished? It is not distinguished, except by the fact that it's full of crazy excess. Now, if anything thrown at you, however tasteless, there's plenty that's, well, indeed, there's no taste at all in most of this movie. It's not meant to be, it's a satire, it's fun, it's Thelma and Louise for the contemporary audience. The number of homages to Seven, and I have actually seen David Fincher's Seven recently, actually, on the screen, and it's, believe me, it's lost none of its impact. And the fact that at the very, very beginning of this film, we have a decapitation so brutal that I had to look away. I didn't, however, cease from looking at a movie that, frankly, it depends what you want. If you want something that's totally vulgar, not your scene, Alex, this very, very definitely isn't. Tons of snugging, a lot of weird dialogue, some funny, some total nonsense, and indeed even the funny stuff is pretty nonsensical, and some performances that, Coleman Domingo's wasted. Remember him in Rustin, Bayard Rustin, Martin Luther King's aide? Well, this, I mean, it's a curiosity. That I did have quite a lot of laughs in it, and I have to say, attending a preview audience, a movie I knew nothing about, simply because it was the only one on that I hadn't seen, it was quite an amusing experience. You meet Jamie, played by Margaret Qualley. Jamie is, she's an absolute lush. I mean, absolutely nothing except excess. Moderation is a fatal thing, said Oscar Wilde. Nothing succeeds like excess, and Jamie is into every form of sapphic excess you can think of. And she and Suki, played by Beanie Feldstein, Jamie is played by Margaret Qualley. They are lovers, but Jamie is so seriously unfaithful that Suki kicks her out. However, she discovers Marisa. And she, played by Geraldine Viswanathan, is going to Tallahassee, Florida. So why not hitch a lift? Well, the problem is that And it's this sort of movie when they go to rent a car. They rent a car which has precious cargo, which criminals are intending to pick up, and they are given the wrong car, so a trio of criminals starts to pursue them. If you want an idea of how crazy this movie is, I mean, the criminals, one of them is a philosopher criminal, if you can consider there's such a thing. Another is just an idiot. And then there's the chief, Coleman Domingo, wasted in that role. And they're following the couple, and the couple have been, well, I mean, Jamie has one intention, and that is, can she get Maria laid, and what will happen, and how will this all pan out, with some of the mob chasing them. There's a lesbian shag with a soccer team, which is quite colourful. Then you've got
What with a soccer team, Richard? Lesbian what with a soccer team?
So unlike
the life of our wonderful queen.
Yes. A series of sexual encounters is what I meant to say, Alex. And indeed, it's quite memorable. I have to say, it's also a bit of fun. Or perhaps by then you're so bored of the dialogue with the whole variety of language that I'm sure your good self would never use. And then there's Senator Channel, billboards advertising him. You see, he's a senator who's in for country and family. And as you probably gather, any such person in any such movie is in fact going to be bad. He's played by Matt Damon. What has he got to hide? What has he got to do with the suitcase in the car that the criminals are chasing? What happens to the criminals? And in what indeed happens to... Does Maria's get laid? What or who?
Do we care?
Well, I mean, it's not the sort of movie that you care about the people. There are some amusing comic moments in it, and I simply sat back and laughed when there was something funny, and when there wasn't, well, did it matter? I don't think it really mattered. I mean, the point, quite frankly, is that you've got a sort of a bit of fun, really. But if you're not amused, you probably wouldn't buy the sort of thing. You probably wouldn't go and see it. It's perfectly obvious from the posters the sort of movie it is. However, Ethan Coen has certainly found a new level. I'm not particularly judgmental. Quite honestly, I just went in it. Vibrant colours and all sorts of homages and all sorts of nonsense. And sometimes it's funny and sometimes it isn't funny. And that head keeps appearing so often that, quite honestly, when you think back on it and you think what's in that briefcase, you wonder why on earth you were quite amused by it at the time.
So I take it you didn't lose your head then, Richard, unlike Seven, and would probably give us a 6 out of 10.
I think that's a pretty accurate summary, Alex. I'm relying on you to do the marking now because you get so accurately what I was going to do.
Thea, is this one that strikes you as, well, after Lindsay Lohan and the joys of that, where should I actually go?
Well, I mean, I just have to say I fully enjoyed Richard's way of trying to explain what this movie is about and his very careful explaining. So I really enjoyed that part. I'm not sure if I watched
a road movie, Fear, like no other.
A rude road movie, to be precise.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of excess. I'm not sure if I will watch this film. I mean, it does seem like a fun film. But I'm just curious at what they're going to do with the cargo. So maybe I will watch it just to know what the cargo is also.
I'd be confused by the football team. Anna Koshkinel, one for yourself?
By what Richard said regarding that it was a gruesome decapitation, because I don't know, I didn't expect that from a comedy, but I don't know, maybe I'll watch it some other day when
Scary Movie 4 also has a lot of decapitations in it, and it's probably sort of a whole different area.
I've watched the first ones and they weren't really my type, so I don't know what to say.
Natasha, after, I say, the joys of Irish Wish, would you actually go for a Rude Road Show?
I'm really conflicted now because I saw the trailer, and off the basis of the trailer, I thought this looked great. It doesn't show it shows that it's going to be funny and a bit in your face and a bit quirky and a bit different in the trailer. And I thought, oh, this actually looks, you know, good. And then if I'm pairing that with what Richard's saying now, which wasn't really depicted much in the trailer, I'm sort of like, oh, I'm now not sure what to do. I feel like I would still probably watch it, but I don't know that I would be as much in a rush to watch it as I was before. Before I was really hyped up, like, oh, I really want to go like find somewhere to view this. Whereas now I'm like, decapitation.
Go back into the adventure room.
There's only one decapitation, Natasha.
All you need, Richard.
For what?
It's all you need. You don't need more than one, surely.
I feel like multiple would be a little bit excessive. A little bit excessive for the poor makeup department. But no, I don't know. I probably will still go and see it because the trailer made it look really quirky, and it does feel like it's a bit of a quirky, different story. But yeah, I at least I've had a warning now. So thank you, Richard. I've gone in there with open eyes, I hope.
Well, I mean, it's a weird, zany mix of fun and games. Incidentally, Geraldine Viswanathan's the character was Marianne, not Maria. But I have to say, I mean, I was amused. But thinking back at it, I mean, a friend of mine was saying, what a lot of absolute cobblers, what nonsense, what drivel that script was, honestly, that you could find amusement in this load of junk put together just to be trendy and also have an audience that was amused but only vaguely amused or didn't seem that amused. Well, I mean, it's interesting. It's divided reviews as well. So I had quite a good time overall, but we do have to put it in perspective. The head, honestly, I mean, my God, Lord, I mean, the nonsense, the whole thing, but nonsense can be amusing.
Well, there you have it. An interesting connection, which clearly you want to see both movies at the same time, Irish Wish and Drive Away Dolls. Meanwhile, of course, people forget about the classic that Ralph Fiennes was involved with back in the 1990s. Of course, he was the quintessential incarnation of Patrick McNee's character of John Steed in The Avengers, a movie which still desperately sort of divides people in the same way, in many ways, as Guy Ritchie's Man from U.N.C.L.E. does. But enough of such stuff. Victoria Simmons, unfortunately, was unable to join us because something has just cropped up over in France, but she wanted to know more about Ralph Fiennes. So, Richard, apart from his incarnation as John Steed, tell us about Ralph Fiennes.
Well, a remarkable actor, and he has a very, very fine screen presence, in my view. I mean,
he's very patient. He's almost a very patient English person, really.
Well, it depends. I know he's certainly temperamentally, as you know perfectly well, is anything but patient. His reputation, in fact, is positively abrasive. However, he's got a remarkable career and launching onto it now. I'd simply spot a film, The English Patient, where he's a central role and plays it with physicality and sensitivity. Whether or not it had much resemblance to the original person, there's another matter for debate. I've seen him in stage in God of Carnage, where the audience howled with laughter when something happens to him that was coming or had been coming for much of the play. He was a Coriolanus, which I failed to see on stage, but I saw the film of it, and that was remarkable.
And John Steed.
Which I see. But Macbeth is what we're building up to.
You said the words, didn't you? I would have said the Scottish play, but you had to burst straight in there. No messing about in any way, shape, or form. I cannot be held responsible for anything the university might do with Siren Radio now you've actually mentioned that word.
I hereby repent. Everyone is probably aware that the mention of the Scottish play is forbidden in actors' dressing rooms, for example, during a play. And indeed, it's one of the things. But Siren, we're not in the dressing room now, and we should be allowed to mention the fact that Ralph Fiennes as Macbeth, incidentally, Doc X, my goodness, that's what a theatre. I never even heard of the theatre. I didn't know it existed. It's opposite Canary Wharf. And it's Macbeth, as you know, begins with a battle, and this is a barren wasteland. It's a contemporary setting. There are burnt out cars, jets zoom overhead.
Is Lindsay Lohan one of the witches, Richard? If not, I don't want to go.
Well, Alex, I'm terribly, terribly sorry, but she wasn't on when I was watching. The witches, incidentally, dominate the whole play, which is part and parcel of the plot. There's no doubt about that. I had my doubts whether the witches, withered and weird in their attire, were in fact as effective as they could have been. But my goodness me, the show is dominated with an extraordinary performance by Ralph Fiennes as a Macbeth so shambolic. And this is someone who anyone could tip into evil. In fact, they could do almost anything with him, because when he writhes in the horror of the thought of what he's about to do, or indeed done. I mean, sometimes he can't even stand up. He's on the floor wrestling with what passes for his conscience. I did have to say, normally one thing, Macbeth, and I've seen Sean Bean, I've seen Roger Allam, I've seen Peter O'Toole most notoriously play it as a comic figure, which did not work, and Ian McKellen as a tragic hero, which did brilliantly in 1975. But this, fascinating to see a Macbeth, but usually Macbeth will at least comes as believable as the warrior who swung the battle in the favour of his sovereign Duncan at the beginning. And in this case, I did wonder what sort of soldier Macbeth would have made, because he's not making, well, he's a disaster as a human being. And when the witches and Lady Macbeth to coax him to horrors, it's a very fine performance. It commands the attention, but my goodness me, I certainly wouldn't trust him with much, because anyone or anything could swing him, his conscience. As I say, quite literally, a couple of occasions, he's on the floor. Lady Macbeth is, usually you need a two-hander, as you had with Ian McKellen and Judi Dench in 1975, which is considered by some one of the greatest Shakespeare productions ever, and that was just extraordinary. And you need a two-hander for this to work properly. The problem with Indira Varma's Lady Macbeth, she's callous. Sure, the character has to be, and she's an Arabiste. There's no.
Has she got any issues with her spots, Richard?
Has she? Sorry,
has
Alex?
She got any issues with her spots?
Well, the damned spot, so far as she's concerned, it's her best moment. Her best moment is, in fact, when she sleepwalks. But the problem is, I couldn't picture her. Doesn't fit in at a banquet. Doesn't even fit in, I have to be honest, with driving Macbeth to kill Duncan, which is a seed he passes on, the witches having infected him with evil. She hasn't the presence that Lady Macbeth wants. She's far too lightweight for the role, in my opinion. So whether it's very well staged, where Banquo's ghost, my goodness me, that's well done, and certainly it's effective when you see the military scenes, the way they make use of that, and Fiennes is super, she is the weak spot here. So I was fascinated by this production, though. It's impressive. And I'm always interested when I see Macbeth to find out what the end is going to be, because we know very well that the witch is the driving force behind all the horrors. And there are horrors. I always remember seeing Michael Fassbender as Macbeth opposite Marion Cotillard's Lady Macbeth on screen. And Macbeth, when attacks Macduff's castle and infamously kills both wife and children, Fassbender actually has them burnt publicly. So you get the most extraordinary quirks. Peter O'Toole played Macbeth as though it was a complete joke. And when he kills Duncan, after he says, as he staggers down. I was sitting on that floor, that which was the preview of the film, and the audience were roaring with laughter before I could even see what they were laughing at. O'Toole drenched himself in blood, and when he holds the daggers before him and says, "I have done the deed," the audience exploded in mirth. Likewise, when Banquo, in that particular production at the Old Vic, appears at the guy, he's Brian Blessed, covered in blood head to foot, although in an abattoir. So you've got all sorts of imagination, as in with any Shakespeare adaptation. But here, yes, I think it works very well. And the sleepwalking scene is Indira Varma's best moment. She simply hasn't or didn't, to me, have the... You've got to have a really monstrous character, someone with presence that, well, it wouldn't take much, as I said, to, as it were, infect this Macbeth with all sorts of horrifying intent. And the intent, remember, was there, planted by the witches. I do have to say that that doesn't work. But yes, it is a fascinating evening. And yes, the theatre I'd never even heard of was packed, not one space, and they cram everyone in. Very impressive.
Well, you may have actually lost count, as indeed I did after I'd reached 20 times that the Scottish play was actually mentioned by Richard Burr. So clearly you can actually play the podcast back and actually just score how many times he actually does talk about the Scottish play. Natasha, preferably without actually mentioning the M word, any thoughts on this? Is it something which you think, well, that sounds good, but if only they got Lindsay Lohan to play Lady M, all would have been fine?
You know, it may surprise some people, but that there have been considerable, you know, moments of my life, considerable times throughout my life when I decided that I needed a time machine. Never have I felt it so keenly and strongly as now. I need to go back to 1975, clearly. But that's a and see that iteration. But no, I think I would like to see this version. I love Shakespeare. I Hamlet is probably my favorite tragedy. But I do enjoy the Scottish play. I would like to see this version because I think as a lead, I think he would be quite good at doing the tortured aspect of the soul. And I think that it would be quite convincing to have him in that role. I'm sad to hear that Lady M was not as convincing because I feel like she's such a visceral.
She needed to embrace her force. Inner Lindsay Lohan angst, as evinced in
maybe,
An Irish Wish.
Maybe that's where she's going wrong. But that's a slight dampener on the whole thing for me. But no, I would still very much be interested in seeing it if I wouldn't have to hop on a 20-hour flight to get there. Maybe it'll come to Australia.
Well, it could be streamed or could be developed from that perspective. Fia, given that you're closer to the land of Hamlet than in the Scottish play, or indeed, actually, I suppose it's equidistant in many ways where you're based in the Netherlands. Any thoughts from yourself?
Well, this was actually, this was the first book by Shakespeare that I read in school, the Scottish play. So I've never seen it in theatre, so I would really love to see it. And I mean, he's such a phenomenal actor. And oh, I would really like to see, I mean, it's unfortunate about Lady M, but I mean, maybe we could get Lindsay Lohan to fly in and just perform it just once. How cool would that be? I would just love to see her do it. Maybe we can make this into a romantic comedy or something. That maybe it would work.
Yeah, I think that with the witches there, they could actually be embracing their inner St. Bridget. In fact, in many ways, perhaps, Natasha, that's the aspect of the reading of Irish Wish you've omitted, that actually it's a contemporary version of the Shakespearean tragedy of the Scottish play.
I could possibly do a little bit of a crossover. So we have a big festival, the biggest festival in Summer Hemisphere is hosted here in Adelaide. It's just finished. It's called Fringe, or Adelaide Fringe. And they actually did I won't say it, they did the Scottish play as part of Fringe, with a company of trained thespians. The thing about it is the company is known for each night one of their members getting outrageously drunk before the performance takes place, and then the rest of the cast is stone cold sober, and they have to get through the entire
play.
Which
is why they end up on the floor like Ralph Fiennes.
Hilariously, last year it was Romeo and Juliet, and can I just say that I sobbed with laughter throughout all of it. It was brilliant. This year it was Macbeth. I did not get a chance to see it. I really wish I had. I have friends who went to go see it. I can't actually give you the name of the company live on radio because Alex
too rude.
Will,
too rude. It's Australia.
Alex will not. Will make a sound effect over the front of it. But take out the word, a similar word for drunk with face being the second word, and Shakespeare. Google it, and if they, I do believe they tour the UK because they are excellent.
Completely
so
manure
faced
is what you're saying.
Sorry.
Completely manure faced.
Yeah. Yes. Google them. They are excellent. They do tour the UK, I believe. So maybe that's the crossover that everyone needs.
And Anna, is this one for you, or is it a case of, frankly, I've had one journey to London, and that was so traumatic, I can never see myself going again, especially not to see a Scottish play. Why wouldn't I go to Edinburgh and see that?
Well, I am actually looking forward to May 2nd, if I'm not wrong with the date. And when we were in school, our teachers, we had a wonderful English teacher. She was printing pages from Shakespeare and different tragedies of his. And she was giving us to read. And I read, I haven't read the full book, basically, but I did read, I don't know, a few parts of it.
You shouldn't read Shakespeare. You should see it performed, Anna.
Yes, you should see it performed. I agree with that. And also, Anthony and Cleopatra was, I read that this and is the second most loved by Shakespeare after the Scottish play. And they always make a comparison between these two also because they were apparently written about this at the same time, if I'm not wrong, and I remember correctly. So yes, I'm looking forward to seeing it hopefully in May when it has its premiere.
There you go. And unfortunately, because the Scottish play was mentioned so much by Richard, we haven't got time to deal with The Occupant this week.
Oh.
So clearly we'll have to hold that back until another time. By the way, Richard, is this The Occupant that comes from a few years ago, or is there another Occupant in mind that you have?
It's another Occupant. It's a Spanish thriller. And actually, it's a movie that, I mean, it's on Netflix. That's why I discovered it. And everyone might like to see it.
Then we will do that. We will indeed follow through with that. For the moment, though, before we actually head off into some more delightful music, of course, from An Irish Wish, possibly for St. Bridget's amongst us and so on, to Natasha Wanton, to Fia van den Bogert, Anna Koshkonel and Richard Fitzwilliams, keep watching the movies.
Put on your red shoes and It's a somewhat sobering thought that one in three people in the United Kingdom actually know someone who's been affected by a brain tumour. And indeed, 16,000 people are diagnosed with a brain tumour every year in the UK. So how can we actually help this? Well, we've got not one, but two fabulous individuals who can actually share their own experiences with respect to this and why we're at Day. It's such an important time and indeed a way of actually showing support and raising support in a month which is officially Brain Tumour Awareness Month, i.e. the month of March. Those two fine folk, well, of course, we have the Head of Stakeholder Relations at Brain Tumour Research. That's Hugh Adams. Good morning, Hugh. How are you?
Morning. I'm well. Thank you, Alex.
Excellent. And we also have an ace presenter who has indeed had a brain tumour herself, of course, brain tumour research patron from the Antiques Roadshow, of course, Theo Burrell. How are you, Theo?
Hi, I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. Theo, if we come to you first, would you like to just share your own particular story and experience of what I'm sure was a very worrying time for yourself?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with a brain tumour called a glioblastoma in the June of 2022, following around 6 months worth of symptoms, which neither my GP nor I could put my finger on. You know, we just could not work out what was wrong with me. And then the diagnosis came, and since then I've had surgery, radiotherapy and chemotherapy, and I get scans like all other brain tumour patients on a very regular basis just to check on the status of the tumour.
And the impact, presumably, on your friends and family, presumably went through the whole gamut of clearly extreme sympathy from the point of view of shock, presumably.
Yeah, it's not a linear process dealing with it. You know, you're up and down. There's definitely an element of loss and grief. Various aspects of my life have had to change completely or just stop, such as going to work on a regular basis. The fatigue that I have as a somebody with a brain tumour means that working even a part-time job is absolutely exhausting. So, yeah, it's been a lot for friends and family, but they've been amazing. And we continue to try and, you know, live our lives and enjoy the time that we have together.
Hugh, I well remember a time a few years ago when a very good friend and colleague of mine was due to be going off to Australia and just had a checkup and then literally was found to actually have a brain tumour and clearly there were a whole range of challenges over the forthcoming years with respect to that. Are things improving since the start of the century? I mean, are we getting better at actually coping with cases like Theo's in essence in terms of how we manage this, or is it still part of the great unknown?
Well, there's a very simple equation here, Alex, and that's if you invest money in research into brain tumours, you'll get closer to a cure, and if you don't, you won't. So we are progressing in terms of the growth of the charity. Brain Tumour Research is investing more money in research itself that then takes it down the translational pipeline. So we invest in scientific research. So what we're funding then goes from the scientist's bench to the patient's bedside within clinical trials, and that's a timely thing, but it's the way forward. And what we're also doing is working with government, and I think that more than ever the political will is with us to try and make a difference. We've just got to make sure that the funding mechanisms are in place and the capacity is there, so that the scientists can be enabled to do what they do. And in the spirit of innovation that we used during the pandemic, we move things forward in a way that is actually fast and treats brain tumours as a clinical priority. And to do that, we also need to have awareness raising. And that's what Wear a Hat Day is all about. You know, people know about us through Wear a Hat Day, but we need more people to get involved, more people to say enough's enough, we've got to change things, because we can make a difference. We can do what we've done with leukemia. We can do what we've done with breast cancer and turn the prognosis for brain tumours on its head, but only if we invest in research.
It's interesting that records into brain cancer research began in 2002, which was sadly 2 years after George Todd, who's the gentleman I referred to earlier, passed away with a brain tumour. But again, I was just staggered to find that brain tumours actually kill more children than adults under the age of 40 than any other cancer. And yet, as you just alluded to, just 1% of the national spend on cancer research has been allocated. I mean, that surely is an unfair and unbalanced equation.
It is an unbalanced equation, and that's why we're trying to challenge that and looking for parity of funding from government. If we look what we've done with breast cancer and leukemia, and people often say to me, they say, well, why has it just been 1% historically. And I think it's about momentum. If you look at what we've done with breast cancer and leukemia, we've invested in that research, we've got progress, and so that's encouraged more research, and that snowball happens, and then the prognosis improves, and suddenly, you know, we've made a real difference. That equation hasn't been happening with brain tumours. We've fallen behind. We need to pick up, and we need to do it together. You know, as you said before, one in three people know someone with a brain tumour. It's not a rare cancer, but it's one of unmet need. So we've got to do better, and that comes down to people getting up and saying enough's enough. I want to do something about it. I want to fundraise for brain tumour research. I want to support them in their campaigning endeavours, because everything can be changed, everything can be improved, but only with adequate funding.
Let's move on to a bit more of a more positive aspect. I noticed that Lock & Company Hatters, the world's oldest hat shop, are involved with this. And I recall they actually once made me a hat when I was doing a sort of riding exercise back in the early part of the century. But let's turn to Theo. Wear a hat day. What hat will you be wearing, and how can people get involved?
So I have a series of hats, but I do have one from Lock & Co as well. So that's a little surprise and a treat. So I'll be putting that on and posting on my social media. People can get involved. It's really simple. And this is, a day for everybody. So all you need to do is put on a hat, take a photograph, upload your photograph to your social media platforms, and make a donation to Brain Tumor Research. Everybody can get involved. It's a lot of fun. It's a positive day about having hope. And it is, you know, we're wearing hats for hope here. So please do that if you can. It really means a lot to the people who are living with brain tumours and to those, you know, family and friends supporting patients.
I've got a few sort of minor questions that I need to obviously ask you from a northern perspective, because being a northern lad, I tend to use a flat cap as opposed to a kind of trilby or a bowler or any of those other hats. So can we actually sort of expand this to wear a cap day if required? Does a baseball cap count, or is it specifically you need to have a hat?
No, you can wear any hat you want. I will be wearing some of the hats from my son's toy box, including a fireman's helmet. So please put on any hat that you wish and just get involved.
Wow, Theo Burrell wears a fireman's helmet. That's going to be a series in itself. Great stuff. Okay, let's find out again just how people get involved with this fantastic project, Hugh, and continue the excellent work that you're actually doing, brain tumour research.
Well, search up brain tumour research, braintumourresearch.org. Look for us on the social medias. And it's wearahatday.org as well. So you'll find out there where to register. And it is the premier brain tumour awareness event in the UK. It works from the catwalk to the playground. It's really fun to get involved. And it's got a serious underpinning as well. So we're really looking forward to it. And we just urge everyone to get involved and have some fun.
Well, we've heard that Theo is going to be wearing one of her son's wonderful offerings. What headwear have you got in mind for yourself?
I've not fully decided, but I'm thinking that I'm going to wear a pork pie hat, and it's actually made by Stetson. So Stetson's a hat company, although they're best known for their cowboy hats, but Stetson have made a pork pie hat, and I've got one of those, and I'll probably be wearing that.
There is, of course, the fez, which would be an homage to the late Tommy Cooper, or possibly even Matt Smith's incarnation of the Doctor. So just random thoughts here. For the moment, to Hugh Adams, Head of Stakeholder Relations at Brain Tumour Research, and, of course, to fabulous Theo Burrell, Brain Tumour Research patron and indeed Antiques Roadshow expert, huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Scenario without siren radio, turn up everyone, save a siren sounds. Come Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA, our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate, keep on keeping on, keep on keeping on.
Sorry,
keep on keeping on.
Sorry,
keep on keeping on.
Sorry,
keep on keeping on. Save Siren Radio.